Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Now, 92.9 FM ESPN presents Memphis's biggest columnist.
You ain't got to do nothing, homeboy. You ain't writing nothing. No, you ain't writing nothing. I ain't letting him write. He ain't getting no interviews.
It's the award-winning Jeff Calkins from the Daily Memphian and the Jeff Calkins Show.
I'm getting no interview.
On 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is something they call a groundbreaker. So let me first apologize to the shirts and the ties for your makeup. Cause I make you ugly as soon as it drops, we're on a rampage. Bubbles popping up before you know it. There's rubble in the cause we'll be pushing it up. Somebody say you better run. Yeah, we think the last great.
Today on the radio show, Chris Herndon's going to join us straight up at 10 o'clock. He has over on Twitter, X/X, he's already posted three favorite James Earl Jones movies. James Earl Jones, of course, died yesterday at the age of 93. I think it was 93. Yeah, 93.
That was what I saw, 93.
And I have to say, I haven't seen any of them. I haven't seen any of his three favorite movies. We'll talk to Chris Herrington about James Earl Jones and other matters straight up at 10 o'clock. And then Fish on Friday on Tuesday, our man in Washington, D.C. will join us to talk about all manner of things. Apple dropped their new iPhone yesterday. You have an Apple, right?
Oh, yeah.
How often do you replace it? Are you a guy who, like, gets every iPhone?
So, I think the stat was up through iPhone 7, I had every iPhone and had either broken or lost every iPhone. And then I found, like, the last somewhere, like, around 10 years, I just wait until it breaks.
So, and originally, even when you were replacing it, annually, yeah. It wasn't that you wanted the newest technology. You just lost the previous one.
Yeah.
Right?
Or broke it.
I am the kind of person who does not, like...
I don't even know what we're on anymore. Are we 16? What is it?
Not only do I not know what we're on, I don't know what I have.
Like, perfect. Let's see.
How do you tell?
Well, so it used to be able, like, they used
mine's pretty new because I broke
it. They used to have it, like, on the back. They would put what version it is.
That
now you have
nice.
To go to the settings.
Yeah, you got to go to the settings. And see, anyway, new Apple iPhone dropped yesterday. I'll tell you, he will tell us why it's particularly well-suited for me at age 62. So we'll talk to Fishman about that. Also,
allegedly have the iPhone 12 Pro Max.
The iPhone. I think I'm probably more current than you.
Yeah, I bet you are.
What do? I go to settings.
So you go to settings, and then there's about. Do you see about, like, at the kind of top-ish? So you go to settings and then...
I see the settings. I see no about.
Sorry. Go to settings and then go to general.
Go to settings. This is top-notch.
This is great radio.
This is top-notch quality radio.
Uh-huh.
And then we go to about.
About.
And then I have the 17.6.1.
No, that's your iOS version.
Oh, sorry.
What does it say model
iPhone
name?
iPhone 14 Pro
see,
Max.
Yeah. So I'm a 12, you're a 14.
There you go. I have the iPhone 14 Pro Max, ladies and gentlemen. Anyway, we got the big debate.
We just taught people how to figure out what version their phone is. You're welcome.
That was it. That was public service. That was the public service portion of the radio show. We got the big debate tonight. And as you know, Jeffrey, I try to steer studiously away from politics because I know people...
Let's just stick to sports.
People feel strongly about this stuff. The last time I think we talked to Fishman about it, it may have been night of the debate again. I don't know if that was a Tuesday, too, but...
No, it was a Thursday.
We noted,
I know it was because I was on I was on my buddy's bachelor party.
We noted that... I think we tried to, you know, studiously get around to not pay much attention to the merits of it one way or another. But we did note that it was much earlier than typical, right?
Right.
And it is amazing. Like,
it was before technically either had been nominated.
Of all the fateful historic presidential debates, there have been presidential debates that have had a massive impact. Most famously, I learned this in school. Nixon and Kennedy. The original Nixon-Kennedy was the first televised debate, and Kennedy was scornful. No, Nixon was scornful of putting on makeup.
Yep.
And Kennedy was not scornful of putting on makeup.
Cool.
So anyone who listened on the radio, those people all thought Nixon won the debate. Anyone who watched on TV all thought Kennedy won in a landslide because Nixon was sweating away over there and whatever else. So there was that absolutely critical debate. And then there were other moments, Ronald Reagan telling probably Walter Mondale, I'm not going to use age and inexperience against my opponent. When the argument was that Reagan was too old. There were certainly others. Gerald Ford had a blunder about whether, was it Poland was behind the Iron Curtain or whatever. And
I think that's right.
It used to be one little slip up like that or a little blunder like that. And like, whoa, he can't be president. We got fact checkers who are checking every 10 seconds something incorrect is said or a flat out lie is said.
It wasn't technically a debate. It was the town hall. With George H.W. Bush, read my lips, no new taxes.
Yeah.
And then he was looking at his watch the whole time.
Oh, yeah,
and
that was a bad one.
Yeah.
It's the Where's the Beef?
Yeah.
That was, what's his name, the little guy?
Ross Perot.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Anyway, and tonight it seems critical simply because it's obviously a new race. People don't know much about Kamala. And so the last one was hugely significant. It became very clear. I mean, I watching it unfold literally in the first 30 seconds, you're like, oh my God, this is like Biden just tottered out there and then he looked drawn and I thought he was going to perish in the first 15 seconds. He couldn't croak out an answer. And, and obviously that's what forced him out of the race. Now, very clearly, the older one, the question about their faculties, whether diminishing, is Donald Trump. So the worm has turned in that respect. But obviously, Trump was dramatically more vigorous than Biden in the last debate. And so we shall see. We'll talk about that a little bit with Fish on Friday, on Tuesday. In terms of James Earl Jones, Jeffrey, I read the obit this morning. We'll get more into James Earl Jones, although we're going to play Believe It or Not in the next segment. I read the obit this morning, and how much do you know about James Earl Jones?
Not as much, I'm sure, as in the obit.
Did you realize he was born in Arkabutler?
I did not.
Yeah. Is that how you say it? Arkabutler.
I think you were close to the last time. Yeah.
Arkabutler. He was born in Arkabutler, Mississippi, right there. Our neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
His dad left basically when he was born, I think to go pursue a career as a prize fighter, later actually did some acting. And then his mom kept him around for 5 years and then she remarried and she left him as well. So he was abandoned at age five. And abandoned to his grandparents in Michigan. So he was in Arkabutler until five. And then And then he moved to Michigan. Do you think they claim him, Mark? Like, is there a... You go into Arca Butler, is there a sign saying birthplace of James Earl Jones? You would the James Earl Jones house or anything like that?
I'm sure they started claiming him once he became famous.
You would think they should claim him, yeah. Anyway, so there, he was raised by his racist grandparents. He said they were the most racist people he'd ever met. They hated white people. They hated Native Americans. They hated whatever. They blamed black people for being enslaved in the first place. Like they was these are evidently
they had takes.
They had takes, and they weren't particularly generous takes. He at age eight he had a stutter. He's obviously traumatized by all of this.
Yeah, I think that's more.
He had a stutter. It wasn't just a stutter. He became essentially mute. He would only communicate in school with notes. He would write notes. He was essentially, for several years in there, would not speak. And then a teacher, thank God for teachers, a teacher, junior high, high school, somewhere in there, read the obit yourself if you want more details, the teacher recognized him as some talent and some talent for poetry. And so he started writing poetry. And then he started becoming comfortable reciting poetry. And then it got to the point where he would recite a poem a day in class. And by the time he had graduated from high school, his stuttering was largely a thing of the past or something that he had wrestled to the ground. He was on the debate team. And he... then it was a winding road, as it often is for actors. He was in the service for a little while. He ended up going to the University of Michigan, didn't finish his degree then, later finished it, and then moved to New York and became an actor. And as obviously had some iconic roles, and I will ask you later, what is your favorite James Earl Jones role? But also, in addition to the, you know, movies that we know, a great Shakespearean actor, just a towering figure, 6'2", 200 pounds. That, ladies and gentlemen, was a career. So we'll talk to Chris Harrington about James Earl Jones. We'll talk to Fishman also in the second hour. Before any of that, Jeffrey, we do have some NFL on and off the field to get to. If you are an Aaron Rodgers hater, and there are some out there, I mostly just want the Jets to lose.
Yeah.
I'm not a big fan of Aaron Rodgers either at this point, but really my rooting interest is in the Jets losing. But if you're an Aaron Rodgers, if you want him and the Jets to fail, was last night decisive one way or another?
Not for me. If anything, I think it was decisive in the he might still have something left in the tank category.
That's the thing. Listen, thank God they lost from Bill's perspective. 49ers win. 49ers win. I'm sorry. 49ers win 39-19. I had it written down 49ers and Packers for some reason. 49ers and Jets. Obviously,
Green's confusing.
The green is confusing. 39, well, the former Packers stuff. It was early when I was preparing. 39-19. But the story really wasn't Aaron Rodgers one way or another. The truth of the matter is, Aaron Rodgers didn't have the ball. No. It was, of all his starts, his team has never had the ball less. 38-40 time of possession to 21-20 was the time of possession. And the story of the game was Jordan Mason stepping in for Christian McCaffrey. If you had Christian McCaffrey on your fantasy team, that's a bummer, huh?
That wasn't what you were looking for.
Did they lie?
Yes. It's very obvious they did.
Shouldn't they be punished for that?
Probably.
Disciplined in some way for that?
Yes.
I mean, they basically said he's going to play, and then he's scratched 90 minutes before the game. They lied.
Yes.
You're not allowed to lie.
Jordan Mason was asked after the game, when did he find out? I found out on Friday.
Yeah. They lied.
And, like, here's how you also knew they lied. Everyone had the same talking point. Talked to Kyle before the game. He said, you know, he thought he's going to, didn't really know he wasn't going to go until he got to the building today. It's like, okay, the lady doth protest too much.
They just freaking lied. I hope they are sanctioned for that in some way. If you're going to have the rules, go ahead and abide by the rules. Not at least don't so blatantly lie about your best player who is not going to play. Anyway, that would irk me if he were on my fantasy team. Jordan Mason, 28 carries, 147 yards. The 49ers, eight straight scoring drives. Eight straight scoring drives. The incredible stat, I thought, was since Kyle Shanahan became the head coach, 2017, this is the 10th running back for the 49ers who has rushed for 100 or more yards.
It's also why I'm pretty sure, while maybe fantasy owners weren't aware, Vegas was at least somewhat aware. The line had dropped all the way down to like 3.5.
What it had been up to?
It had been up as high as 6, 6.5, something like that.
The amazing thing about Jordan Mason is he wasn't even good at Georgia Tech.
No.
I mean, he was fine. He was a 600-yard back, basically, you know, at Georgia Tech.
But, I mean, isn't this kind of the Shanahan legacy?
Like, yeah.
Like, whether it's his dad, whether it's him, it's like, yeah, they'll find somebody off the street and they'll get him 100 yards.
It's funny, though. You watch him run. This is probably not true, but you watch him run and I'm thinking, man, I'd like him running for the Bills. Like, he runs hard, you know?
Yeah,
like,
I would also say, though, it has to be really fun to run behind that offensive
line. That's the thing.
Like, they push. The NFL, no one really gets that kind of push like they do.
I came away, my biggest impression the entire game was, and I know the Lions look good, and I heard it was either Jason and John or Gabe, whatever, saying that the Giants are the favorite in the NFC, should be the favorite in the NFC.
The Lions? Because I hope you don't mean the Giants.
The Lions should be.
Because the Giants are only the favorite.
No, I'm saying the Lions. And I just don't believe it. Like, the 49ers are freaking loaded. They're just loaded because they weren't even. They got no Christian McCaffrey. Brandon Ayuk is dropping touchdown passes. He's not himself yet, right? And they just dominated this game.
The only thing that works against the Niners is not on field. The only thing that works against the 49ers is like history and trends, which is nobody goes to the NFC title game that many times in a row.
They're just loaded. Now,
Brock was a little shaky at times.
He was shaky, but he made
some good throws,
he
too.
He made some good throws. No, like, he is not just a... Like, you're in there, he's, you know, I don't know. Like, the throw to Ayuk that it was dropped was just a...
Absolute dime.
Dime, yeah.
It was a corner out, perfectly thrown. But that's kind of the great thing about Brock and why Brock is so amazing for discourse. He'll give you the ammo and, like, whatever side you want to be, he'll give you all the ammo you need. If you want to be for him, if you want to be against him.
And so they're awesome. The other side, and I get back to where are we on Aaron Rodgers. 13-21, 167 yards. That's not great, obviously. He had the first drive, the Garrett Wilson drive, looked terrific. The touchdown pass on the free play was vintage.
I put it in my group chat. I was like, that was vintage. Aaron. Like, when you think about Aaron Rodgers, it's getting somebody to jump off sides and throwing an absolute dime.
That was beautiful. He doesn't look mobile at all, but he wasn't limping around. But
no, he didn't look mobile, but at the same time, he also didn't look like, oh, he can't move.
No, exactly right. He just looked like a quarterback who's a pocket passer.
Yeah.
Right?
He looked as mobile as my boy Goff.
He was sacked once by Leonard Floyd. Ironically, the player who sacked him when he was hurt last year. Back then he played for the Bills. He was pressured 5 times on 22 dropbacks. Now, he did his completion percentage, and it's interesting how these stats creep up. Like, stats become commonly used. The stat that I'm seeing used more this year than I've ever seen before is percent above or below expectation, completion percentage. And he was 10.7% below expectation on his completion percentage. But I'm also judging this compared to what the Jets had last year. What the Jets had last year was complete, absolute incompetence and trash. What he looked like yesterday was not complete, absolute incompetence and trash. Now, mind you, didn't like Josh Allen rushing for two touchdowns and throwing for two touchdowns. Didn't look like that, but looked competent, flashes, decent. They got the Titans next. I won't be surprised if he throws for 250 yards against the Titans and they win going away.
No, I do. I will say that while I'm not as, while I'm setting aside the, I think there's a group of people that are hoping, he was really bad his last year in Green Bay. He is kind of washed. I'm setting aside that because I thought I saw plenty in terms of the ability to throw the ball that I didn't even see that year. My biggest concern for the Jets coming into the season was not alleviated last night. How much is that? They couldn't do anything, Jeff. Whether it was running, pass protecting, it was nothing. They could not do anything.
As I said, he was only pressured 5 of 22 times. That is not, statistically, is not bad. One of the things that I noticed, he doesn't really have great weapons, except for Garrett. There's
Wilson and Hall. So
that's
if you would have watched, if you watched the Manning cast, it's going to take a little bit of them getting used to it. But the first half with Belichick is going to be a good segment. You can just tell. And the whole time, that one drive where the Jets looked really good, the whole time he's just screaming, Wilson, Wilson, double
Belichick
Wilson.
Is?
Yes. They have one. He goes, that's where they want to go. Take him away.
And they got nothing else. I think Lazard, he's just not very good. He's fine. He caught the touchdown pass.
He drops the first, on that first drive,
he's not a guy who scares you.
No.
And then Mike Williams was a non-factor.
Yeah.
And so they don't have other weapons, and that, I think, will get in their way. But I haven't given up on the Jets, sadly, based on that.
I will say this, though. After, my week one, complete week one overreaction is the Bills are still winning the East.
One of the problems is they got another injury. Taron Johnson is injured. Really, they're two best defensive players. Two of their best defensive players. Their best linebacker and their all-pro nickel safety. Now,
yeah, but Rousseau might be more than
Oliver's
just good.
Oliver's really good, and Rousseau was tremendous.
Rousseau might actually tremendous. Be, player.
So, any other thoughts? How was Belichick?
Again, I enjoy, there's definitely going to be some mechanics getting used to it of the three of them, because there were some moments where they were talking over each other, and it's fine at certain points, but it was there was a delay as well.
The delay, so, I saw some highlights of it, and the delay was highly noticeable.
Correct. So, as a longtime watcher of the Manning cast, they get through this. They've had some issues before, but they actually get better. So I think that's going to be a very good segment.
All right. So the other thing that happened in the NFL is we got the body cam video on the arrest of Tyreek Hill. And what was your reaction?
My first reaction was, did we not learn anything from Louisville? You just flip that bad boy off.
What does that mean?
Flip the body cam off. Why do you think we didn't get to see? Because I know if we would have seen the Scotty stuff, we would have had a very similar reaction. And it's just holy cow, how did that guy go from 0 to 60 like that?
Yeah, I think there's, what's interesting to me is to, and I thought about taking calls on this. I could go off the rails very quickly. To see the reaction is interesting, because there are definitely some people who are looking at this, who look at the video and say, well, all he had to do was roll down his window and then none of this would have happened. Right? That is a, and by the way, it is a safety question to have tinted window. The reason you want the window down is because you don't know what the hell's going on inside the car, right?
There's a reason why on paper it's illegal.
A dude could have a gun in there, and so you want the damn window rolled down, right? And Tyreek Hill, from the very moment, again, I'm just saying, I'm not using this to justify what happened next, but let's just be clear here. He was not without fault, right?
Yes, no, this was not.
He was not without fault. He started out by saying, you're pulled over, and you immediately tell the cop, don't knock on my window, and then not roll down your window. He was a party to this, and he very clearly, and if you're a cop, I can understand why you don't want someone hiding behind a damn tinted window. It's a matter of safety, getting your head blown off.
Yeah.
Right?
I can agree with you on that.
Having said that, the cop who just decides to come in there and throw him out of the car is wildly over the line.
Yes.
Wildly over the line. And it feeds into, and it's, I mean, tragically, it's right now we have the Tyre Nichols case trial beginning in Memphis.
Jury selection, yeah.
Jury selection began yesterday. And, like, you're just, what the hell? What came over that cop that he thought at that moment it was, and he did, he just snapped. He said, what? Well, you know, never mind. And he just threw him to the ground. Which was over the line and unnecessary.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not a cop. I don't know police, but it doesn't, because someone is disrespectful, not obeying your commands, whatever else, I don't think authorizes you to throw him to the ground. Once he started getting out of the car, fine, make him out. This is not my area of expertise. I do think it's important to acknowledge that Tyreek Hill was not without fault here, but I think the reaction was wildly over the line.
Yeah.
And I don't actually see how you can look at that and say either of the other, like, I don't see how you can exclusively blame Tyreek Hill, and I don't see how you could, not least acknowledge that Tyreek Hill, did not pay the way that he should have in this.
Yeah, to me, it's also like, I don't know, like, shouldn't there be some type of way of, like, marking players on game day? And I get it. I find it hard to believe he was doing 120, but I guarantee he wasn't doing the speed limit. But at the same time, it's like, I guarantee everybody wasn't doing the speed limit. But
I mean, whatever.
Shouldn't there be, like, some type of, like, player route?
No, there shouldn't. No, no. Players shouldn't.
Because isn't this within a block of the stadium?
Players can obey the speed limit, too. Or come within, you know, 8-10 miles of the speed limit.
Yeah.
I don't need players thinking because we have a special thing, we can go 92, 97, 112.
I'm not even saying that.
What
but
was
like
he driving, by the way? What was that car?
I think it was a Lambo, but the video I kept seeing, because it was all blacked out, like I couldn't see. I think it was a Lamborghini.
I mean, it was entitlement on the part of Tyreek Hill. There was no question. Very beginning, it's I'm a superstar. What are you doing stopping me?
Yeah.
That's the vibe. And that vibe very clearly enraged that other cop. So he then stepped over the line. And
I will say Tyreek's,
wildly over the
Tyreek's
line.
Vibe, though, was also like, this is how I drive to work.
Right. Yeah, well, I don't know. The one cop I suspect will be.
Well, that's why I think only one's been suspended, and I suspect it was the one that...
Right. And it was, by the way, on leave pending investigation.
Right, or whatever.
They didn't make some... They didn't, but it's probably... I assume it's...
Disciplined or whatever.
And Tyreek Hill said, well, I didn't want to roll down the window because... Well, you don't get to make that decision. Because
at that point,
I'd be recognized.
Yes.
But you've been pulled over. You do what they say, whatever. And it doesn't mean... I'm not saying there aren't bad cops who, even if you do what they say, haven't beaten the hell out of people or killed them in the past. So I'm not... It also just does not justify what the cop did either. It's pretty bad. And I'm glad we have body cams. Because for a long time, people would lie about what happened. I mean, hell, what'd we see in Louisville? Lied about what happened.
Jeff, don't forget, do we know what happened to that poor cop's pants?
Yeah. He's flat out lied about what happened.
No.
So, and if that's too down the middle for y'all, I apologize. But I'll assign greater fault to the cop, but some degree of fault to Tyreek Hill.
Yeah, it's like one of those ones where it's like, if I have to pick one person...
Yeah, I'll say the cop was worse.
But I'm not sitting there going...
And the cop has the obligation to serve, and the cop is the higher calling.
But I'm not saying
stuff.
It's binary. Either. I agree with you.
Yeah.
Getting word. It was a McLaren, a Mercedes McLaren.
Okay. We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to play Believe It or Not. We got a lot to get into, Memphis football. We had the dueling press conferences yesterday, Jeffrey, from Mike Norvell and from Ryan. We got to get back into James Earl Jones. I have a very important question for you when it comes to James Earl Jones and other matters. We will do that next. In the meantime, let me tell you, if you are selling your home, Call Josh Hysaw and his team at Keller Williams Realty. More than 300 five-star Google reviews. That's not a guy on the radio telling you about it. That's people who have been treated well by Josh Hysaw, who have wanted to sell their house, who have sold their house, and who have had a fabulous experience. Five-star reviews. More than 300 five-star reviews. 901-461-8147. Josh will make you an instant cash offer at full market value for your home. He'll tell you how much it's worth if you pop on over to the website, joshhasthebuyers.com. Type in your address. You'll see what it's worth. Josh offers flexible fees, no upfront cost, and will let you out of the contract at any time, risk-free. Once again, phone number is 901-461-8147 or joshhasthebuyers.com. Back in a moment, Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. You've got a big yard, piece of land you're taking care of. You got a big old garden. Get yourself a tractor. Get yourself a tractor from Mid-South Ag Equipment. Right now, they've got the Case IH tractor. It's a smaller tractor, perfect for what you need, with 140 horsepower or less. They got them in stock and 0% financing. 0% financing on the Case IH tractor. Forget green. Go big red with a smaller Case IH tractor from Mid-South Ag Equipment, located right there on Highway 302 in Byhalia. Let's play Believe It or Not.
Now it's time for Believe It.
Believe. I don't even know if I believe.
Now I'm a believer.
Or not. Believe It or Not on the Jeff Calkins Show.
James Earl Jones' most iconic role was Field of Dreams.
Believe It or Not.
This is tough. I'm going to say I don't believe it, even though I know it's not his role, but in the end, he is the voice of the quote-unquote greatest villain of all time.
Well, let's just give people a little sampling so they can tell for themselves. So there's obviously, and it's interesting, Chris Harrington has three movies that he mentions that James Earl Jones starred in, none of which we will talk about. We'll talk about those with Chris Harrington straight up at 10 o'clock. But we'll give you three of his iconic roles, and you can decide which you like best. What's number one, Jeffrey? What do we got first?
Jeff, let's start with Terrence Mann's speech about baseball from Field of Dreams.
There we go.
America has rolled by like an army of steamrollers. It's been erased like a blackboard, rebuilt and erased again. But baseball has marked the time. This field, this game, it's a part of our past, Ray. It reminds us of all that once was good and it could be again. Oh, people will come, Ray. People will most definitely come.
That's unbelievably good.
I know that movie's so sappy, and I understand the technical issues with it. But damn,
that
it makes you feel
such
good.
A great,
it's such a good movie.
I didn't love the movie, but we talked about earlier that James Earl Jones, when he was young, was not just a stutterer. He was a stutterer to such an extent that he was essentially mute. He did not speak in school. He would write. He would communicate by notes. And he said later, "It's interesting when you hear him speak." There is this sort of restrained power in every word, right? And he sort of says that comes from, there has to be a, as a stutterer,
yes,
there has to be a deliberate quality to it all that is embedded in his whole life of speaking. And you can hear that, can't you? Like there is a,
well, it's on top of
that stuff out.
He has a very powerful voice.
Well, he obviously does, too. Like, the voice as an instrument is also... And that's, yes, he very clearly has this great voice as an instrument. There's a clip you can watch where he is... David Letterman has him reading the top 10 list. Things that would sound cool, even when they're read by James Earl Jones. And he would take ridiculous, stupid advertising jingles, and he would read them out loud. I'm going to spare you those. But... oh, you got those too?
Get them.
We may play those later.
Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, there's one. There is Field of Dreams. What do we got? What are you putting it up against, Jeffrey?
These are the two greatest voice performances.
Yes, greatest voice performances. Yeah. What's the next one?
She must have hidden the plans in the escape pod. Send a detachment down to retrieve them. See to it personally, Commander. There'll be no one to stop us this time.
Yes, sir.
Obi-Wan never told you what happened to your father.
He told me enough. He told me you killed him.
No. I am your father.
What?
So, you have accepted the truth.
I've accepted the truth that you were once Anakin Skywalker, my father.
That name no longer has any meaning for me.
Look inside yourself, Simba. You are more than what you have become. You must take your place in the circle of life.
How can I go back? I'm not who I used to be.
Remember who you are. Look, Simba. Everything the light...
Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
Touches is our kingdom. A king's time as ruler rises and falls like the sun. One day, Simba, the sun will set on my time here and will rise with you as the new king.
And this will all be mine?
Everything.
Everything the light touches. What about that shadowy place?
That's beyond our borders. You must never go there, Simba.
But I thought a king can do whatever he wants.
Oh, there's more to being king than getting your way all the time.
There's more?
Simba. Everything you see exists together in a delicate balance. As king, you need to understand that balance and respect all the creatures, from the crawling ant to the leaping antelope.
But Dad, don't we eat the antelope?
Yes, Simba, but let me explain. When we die, our bodies become the grass, and the antelope eat the grass. And so, we are all connected in the great circle of life.
You know, I think I like best that one, like the Circle of Life one and the Field of Dreams one, because I like the writing the best. You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
I think it's the, and is he cheating in Darth Vader? He's got the little, you know, the little voice thing going on there too.
Well, the real cheating is how cool the character looks. And then you combine the voice.
Right.
With.
So you're going iconic Darth Vader. I think you're right.
I think you have to say in the end, like, it is.
I think if you're going to say who was, yeah, he was the voice. If you say the voice of, he was the voice of Darth Vader. He was not, in the first two films, was not credited. Did not wish to be credited as the voice. In the third film, he was. And then later on, whatever, in retrospect, credited.
Yes.
So.
Well, and they even started, because his health's not been great the past few years, but there have been some new Darth Vader roles, and they've, like, AI'd his voice and credited him.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I have the Letterman.
Okay. Here he is. We'll get a little bonus. Here is James Earl Jones reading with David Letterman.
He's in character.
Yeah, like that guy that was here earlier. Top Gun things that sound cool when spoken by James Earl Jones. Here we go, number 10.
I can't believe it's not butter.
Yeah. Number 9.
Objects in mirror may be closer than they appear.
Number 8.
J-Lo in the house.
J-Lo in the house.
Now that's not a cook.
Number 7.
Click here now for the hottest sex sites on the web.
Number 6.
And the Academy Award for Best Picture goes to... Dude, where's my car?
I like that. Number 5.
You're not fully clean until you're zestfully clean.
Number 4.
You mean I get all these great funk classics on just one CD or cassette.
In 1999. Yeah.
Number three.
Number three.
Well, now, wait a minute. That makes no sense at all. The number two cool thing when spoken by James Earl Jones.
Meow, 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 meow.
And the number one thing that sounds cool when spoken by James Earl Jones.
Wazza!
There you go. James Earl Jones. Okay.
The thing is, though, that's actually a good video because, like, it's like if you want a time capsule.
It's totally a time capsule.
Like, this
like you
is
got
like,
what's up and meow, 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 and that's what that's
not
what
clean
the,
to your zestfully clean. Clean. Yeah,
right, exactly. All right. The Memphis Tigers will be able to run the ball on Florida State.
Believe it or not.
I'm going to say I don't believe it, but not with great conviction.
So,
I still think Florida State's going to present some problems guard center guard for them.
Georgia Tech rushed for 190. BC rushed for 263. By the way, Florida State in the meantime rushed for 98 against Georgia Tech and 21 against BC.
Yeah.
That's just crazy. You don't think they're going to be able to run the ball?
I think that there's going to be a concerted effort by Florida State over the last 2 weeks to figure out how to stop the run.
Do you believe, as Mike Norvell indicated yesterday, that Ryan Silverfield's been playing vanilla?
I definitely think they've been playing more.
Not showing them the stuff.
Yeah. Because we talked about it game one. You and I were like, I don't know. It looked like they ran like three plays.
Right.
And then last week, they were able to just run the ball. And so, like, Seth didn't have to do much. It wasn't like we were like, oh, Seth wasn't good. It's just Seth didn't have to do much. And I think that was a direct result. Is like, once they figured out, hey, that we can run the ball and we can stop them, like, let's not waste stuff that we don't have to. I think that's probably fair.
It was an interesting conversation yesterday. Among other things, Ryan said, I would not be standing here but for Mike Norvell, which is true. As the Memphis coach, that's absolutely true. It is interesting to look back because the other big candidates were Dan Lanning, who was tremendous in the interview. And you have to say, although Oregon's off to a rough start, right now looks like the best of the candidates, right? Like slam dunk. Like Dan Lanning is a star. Now, if Dan Lanning had come here, would he have come and left by now? Like, who knows? Who knows what that alternate universe would have looked like? But if you right now can choose one of these three coaches I'm about to mention to coach your team, one of them's Ryan, one's Dan Lanning, and I get to the other one in a minute, you would pick Dan Lanning.
Yeah.
That was the right choice. I'm not saying Ryan's a bad choice, but the right choice was Dan Lanning because he's become a star.
And
right?
Dan Lanning also, while he was on the defensive side of the ball, he still fit their profile of what they've been having success with, which was young guy, hungry, builds
aggressive, and by the way, is a guy who does whip up the populace.
Yeah.
You know, right, whatever. Barry Odom was the other guy. Now, Barry Odom has certainly found his way, too, right?
Absolutely.
Like, he's killing it now. So Barry Odom was Laird Veach's, like, favorite, had a relationship with Laird, and then there was Ryan. I think you can argue that the Tigers did just fine with Ryan, but that he's the third best choice.
Yeah, but I also...
But it's also, like...
I want to go back
and... But we don't know what the world would...
Right.
All of this is an alternate view.
I do think, though, if you would have put it up to the populace at the time that Barry's name came about, I think more people would have said, why don't we see what we got with Ryan?
Oh, I'm not... I think they would have said it over Dan Lanning. I think Ryan was the popular choice.
See, I think had Lanning's name gotten out there, I think you would have seen a little different... I think if it was...
Ryan was very clearly the overwhelming popular choice. It was coming off the Cotton Bowl. He was the interim coach. He was going to keep it going. He was getting Brady back. That's why he got the job, is because he was the overwhelming... Everyone in media was supporting him. Everyone, like, he was wildly the popular choice for that job. Continuity, everything else. I think Dan Lanning's name was out. I certainly heard Dan Lanning's name. I knew that he
interviewed... I don't think he got to the public like it did with the other two.
But it's you're right. I mean, and again, like I've said this before, Ed Scott gave one of the greatest press conferences performances I've ever seen. Ryan's press conference performance upon getting that job was unbelievably great. It was emotional, and it was, and to his credit, it's funny. Like, you know how Penny will talk about COVID, like this is, you know, well, you COVID came along. Well, yeah. Ryan had COVID to deal with too.
Yeah.
And Ryan, to his everlasting credit, has climbed out of the hole that he was in a year ago. You know, he looked sort of teetering there. You know, people were putting Ryan on a hot seat or a warm seat anyway, right? And to his credit, he has climbed out of it. The truth of the matter is Ryan, if you're Penny Hardaway, and Penny probably thinks he's too good to look at it this way, he should look at Ryan as an example of how things can look a little shaky for me, but if I focus on plan A, if I focus on the main thing, which is winning games, you can turn this around. And I think Ryan is 100% evidence of that. Like, Ryan is focused on the main thing, which is winning games, and he has turned it around.
I totally agree. And then I would also argue, like, if Penny focuses on the main thing and what you said, like winning games, like people are going to be much more enthusiastic about that.
Than the interview that he just did, for example. Yep. Okay, here's one, because I meant to talk about this yesterday, but I did not. Javon Quinterly will be remembered as a failure.
Believe it or not.
Failures, is that the right word?
That was his word. And I don't think it's true.
I don't believe that. It's not failure, because there were some big moments.
No. I mean, first of all, I think this is beyond the University of Memphis when he talks about this. Anyway,
yeah,
he's retired. He's retired from basketball, and he posted, he put up a post. And honestly, you read it, it's just kind of sad. He said this: "I made the decision to let go of the game of basketball, which has greatly shaped who I am since I could remember. This game has opened a plethora of doors for me, and for that I will be forever grateful. But God has chosen a different path. Even while I've accomplished some incredible things, had priceless experiences, and formed friendships for life, on the other side of that, I've experienced some of my lowest moments. And as much as it pains me to type this, I can't continue this fight with something I am no longer in love with. To the majority, I will always be remembered as a failure. But while that may be the case in basketball, they say the greatest successes in life often emerge from the most difficult setbacks. I am fortunate to have earned over 7 figures in NIL while playing college ball, and I'm quite eager to take advantage of the head start that has given me, and to have the opportunity to discover more about this incredible world and all it has to offer, and to be able to identify myself as someone other than a basketball player for the first time. I apologize to those I have let down, and will always be grateful to those who have had faith in me. However, I'm taking a different route now, one that should provide me happiness and the ability to love myself again." Well, I read that, and I'm like, oh, man, like, the guy was a high-level Division I basketball player. He is not, by any stretch, a failure. And the idea that he needs to learn to love himself again, that it shows the sort of, like, this is really, he believes everyone thinks of him as a failure. Most think of him as a failure. And he was obviously a disappointment at Memphis. That whole team was a disappointment. But that's different from labeling yourself a failure. He was an unbelievably high-level basketball player who, as he said, made 7 figures. I'm sorry that he feels that way about himself, but I also think I like the optimism about how he's eager to get started on his next life. I thought that was, very nice. The other thing, what's interesting is where he said, "I want to do something, you know, I know something that I no longer love. I can't continue this fight with something I am no longer in love with." And I think you can argue, indeed, some would have said, he wasn't in love with it to the extent that he was a disappointment at the end. It's because he didn't love it then.
Yeah,
he was doing it because he's a basketball player who makes money, and so he had to keep doing it, but he obviously wasn't in love with it.
Yeah, I think there's two things. Number one, what I'd always say to someone like that, "Hey, Javon, nobody thinks about you more than you."
Right, so that's true.
You know what I mean?
We're not thinking of you one way or another.
Right. No, but I don't even mean that. Like, right. I mean that as in, like, hey, man, cut yourself some slack. But I definitely always felt like Javon played basketball because he was good at it more than he loved it.
Well, it's like Hashim Thabeet played basketball because he was tall.
Correct. And by the way, and I would also tell, I would tell Javon, you're not the only athlete that's ever done that.
And it's okay to not love playing basketball. To be, it's okay to be good at it and not playing basketball. Hell, people like, I was not as good at being a lawyer as Javon Quinterly was at playing basketball. But I had good grades in law school and all that, and I left it. You know what I mean? Like, you can be good at something and not love it and just choose to do something else.
I always think back, there were a few athletes that I covered that played football and basketball, and then they would play basketball, and everybody like, why didn't you play? You were better in football. Why didn't you play football?
I like basketball, right? I love basketball.
And guess what? Sometimes people don't like getting hit. You know what I mean? Like, football's got a lot of other challenges, a lot of other aspects of it. Like, that's their choice.
The NFL weekend, really, the most notable thing about the NFL weekend was all the bad quarterbacking.
Believe it or not.
So I'm going to say I don't believe that, but I want to kind of go tangentially.
Mm-hmm.
Is running the ball back? So I looked this up. The run-pass ratio from week one was 55 pass, 45 run. That is the lowest amount of passing since 2008 in terms of a week one performance. And if you like start to look at, like, Bills are the perfect microcosm.
Bills were exactly. I mean, Bills have never run the ball that much. And they, I mean, I think Josh threw two balls in the first half or something like that. Like, he was.
But I would also point this out. The Bills offense last year, in like from all the way, if you go up to the 10, was one of the best offenses in the league. But inside the 10, they were one of the worst offenses in the league. Well, again, it's the Cardinals. Who knows? Maybe the Cardinals' defense isn't that good. But the Bills were pretty good in the red zone. And they were scoring. And so, like, I was starting to think about it in terms of even last year what we saw with the Chiefs. Like, it's not like the Chiefs said, we're taking the ball out of Mahomes' hands. But they did basically say, like, all right, everybody's focusing up on covering receivers, whatnot. We're going to get big, and we're going to start being a little more physical. And that's what I'm more curious about.
So I think that's an interesting trend. I still think it's just surface level. What sticks out to me is the bad quarterbacking. Like, you've got, who was worse? Like, you've got Daniel Jones, who was a disaster.
Yep.
You got Deshaun, who was a disaster. By the way, he's now been sued again for another sexual harassment, assault, whatever it is. But from the, at least it's from the same time period. It's not like he settled them and then there's another one since then. You got Will Levis, who was horrible, right? So you got Deshaun Watson, horrible. Daniel Jones, horrible. Will Levis, horrible. Bryce Young, horrible. Kirk Cousins, horrible. Or at least bad.
He's horrible.
Horrible. Okay. So you got all those guys horrible. And then the rookies who were all bad, right? The rookies were all bad. Who was the only ones who were like, and Anthony Richardson, while he had three throws of more than 50 yards, including one, which I still can't get my mind around,
might be the single greatest throw of all time
I've ever seen in my life. He was 9 of 19 for 212 yards.
Yes.
Like, and so, and by the way, because of his wild inconsistency, Indy had 43 plays. The Texans had 76.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, it's just, I'm not comfortable right now with Anthony Richardson as quarterback. Maybe he's early Josh and it'll figure
it out. He's not played a lot of football.
He's not played a lot of football, so whatever. But he wasn't good either, really. He was spectacular, but not good. The only ones who were better than you would have hoped, Sam Darnold very clearly was better.
Yep.
Derek Carr, better.
Yes, no, Derek Carr might be in a situation, though, where they brought in a normal offense, and he might be pretty good. Like, I think their offense, they had the problem of, since he's been in New Orleans, defensive coordinator kind of imposing his will, and their offense is stupid. Now they're kind of doing stuff that everybody else does, and he looks normal.
And then Brissett may be better, but mostly that was the running stuff.
Nah, Brissett was, I don't remember him throwing a ball over 8 yards. But Ramadre,
So there's just a lot of bad quarterbacking. What's interesting is then you had Mahomes was good, Josh was good, CJ Stroud was good. Like, the guys who were great were great. And
minus Joe.
Minus Joe Burrow. Oh, there's another one who was bad.
Joe was fine. Saying bad.
Bad relative to his standard.
Yes.
So I thought it was pretty striking, honestly.
I think you have to, like, are we just saying on-field performance, or are we like factoring in? Because if we're factoring in the contract, Deshaun's, you can make the argument like the worst contract in the history of football.
That is the Deshaun stuff, by the way. They're like, at some point you got to move on, right? But if you move on,
it's like $170 million or something like that.
Well, so you could keep him as they owe him $93 million over the next 3 years, so they could keep him as a backup. I mean, because Joe Flacco was much better in the same offense, right? In this, with all the same offensive line issues,
with the same,
all the same
exactly
weapon
Conklin
issues,
was out,
right? Running
out.
Backs out, all the same problems. He was dramatically better, and so you could just start Winston, right, and have Deshaun Watson be a backup owed $93 million over the next 3 years. If you cut him, you eat $173 million. That's untenable. They've really effed themselves totally, because they've just totally effed themselves. And by the way, good.
Yeah. No. Okay. To me, it's like, I do like when bad franchises have to like eat it.
Well, and it was the problem is they also whatever, he was a bad guy.
No, it's a legitimate question now. Is he a worse player or person?
All right, we got Chris Harrington coming up next, then Fish on Friday on Tuesday. Busy show today. If you are looking for a new financial institution, I would recommend Leaders Credit Union. Leaders Credit Union, here's a deal. They got a 5% checking account. That's right. You can earn up to 5% APY with Champions Reward Checking from Leaders Credit Union. 5% on your checking account, no monthly fee, no minimum balance, easy access to your money through their mobile app. Their mobile app's unbelievably good. Just go to leaderscu.com/ESPN for details. leaderscu.com/ESPN for details. But the point is, the reason they can do that is it's a credit union. They don't have stockholders. They exist purely for the benefit of their members. And it's why they have such great rates, such great technology, and such great service. So whether you're looking for a new mortgage or a new car loan or a new financial institution, check out Leaders Credit Union. When we return, Chris Harrington joins the show, then Fish on Friday. On Tuesday, it is the Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do this, Chris Harrington.
Now, it's Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian on the Grizzlies, Memphis, and more. Presented by the Majestic Grill. Rediscover downtown dining. Chris Harrington on 92.9's Jeff Calkins Show.
Chris Harrington joins me now. Chris, what are you listening to?
That is, I've Got Dreams to Remember, one of my favorite Otis Redding songs. We talked about it yesterday, but he didn't do an Otis Redding song, so a day late for his birthday.
All right. So, James Earl Jones died yesterday, and over on Twitter/X, you have a list of three. You didn't say your three favorite. You said three favorite, not your an absolute favorite. But anyway, your three favorite James Earl Jones movies. What are they?
I think the three that I mentioned there were Big O' Long's, Traveling All Stars, and Motor Kings, which is from the 70s, and it's sort of a comedy. It's about Negro League baseball, and he plays a character, a slugging catcher, sort of based on Josh Gibson. Billy Dee Williams stars as sort of a Satchel Paige-like character. Richard Pryor is also in that. That movie's kind of hard to find these days, but it's a sort of a baseball comedy period piece about Negro League baseball. And then Mate One is a John Sayles movie from the late 80s. It's another period piece. It's about a coal strike in Kentucky. It's sort of a labor movie, a labor unrest movie. Stars Chris Cooper in his debut, but James Earl Jones is sort of the second lead in that. And then the other one, which I think I'm going to write about very briefly today in the movies column I do this week, because it's partly filmed in Memphis. It's not set in Memphis, but it's partly filmed in Memphis. It's this movie called A Family Thing from the mid-90s. And it's it was co-written by Billy Bob Thornton back early in his career when he was more of a screenwriter than an actor, and he wrote several sort of Arkansas-set movies. And this is a movie that's partly set in Arkansas, but mostly in Chicago. And it co-stars James Earl Jones and Robert Duvall. as two men who, well, one of them discovers. It turns out they are brothers. And Robert Duvall learns that he is a brother and that he is a black brother in Chicago, you know, when his mother in Arkansas dies, and he goes to Chicago to meet this brother he's never known. And that's a really interesting, really good movie that I think is very underseen. And there's a real pleasure in watching James Earl Jones and Robert Duvall in their mid-60s, like, co-starring together and just having tons of scenes together in a movie.
Is it available? More? You said Bingo Long's
so
Trailer All-Stars
list.
Family
Thing is currently, you know, the streaming services are sort of complicated these days. There's a website called Just Watch where you can type in names of movies. It'll tell you where things are available. So A Family Thing right now is available for free on Tubi, and it's available for free on the Roku channel. I think it's also available, like, you know, for a lot of movies, it's available for rent for $3 or whatever on Amazon and stuff like that. In terms of free streaming, it's on Tubi and Roku.
Did you know, until I read the New York Times obit, I didn't know he was from Arca Butler originally.
Yeah, it's one of these things where he moved when he was like four years old or something,
he was,
right?
So he was five.
It's like a good,
yeah.
It's a great migration thing where he was sort of somewhat similar to his character in A Family Thing, who was born in Arkansas but then moved up to Chicago, and so I think they moved up to Michigan, I believe. And so, you know, he's I don't think his life, you know, it's a typical story, you know, of black people of his generation and older in terms of those Southern roots, but then you move elsewhere. You know, Aretha Franklin.
Well, right. I was going to say, Aretha was like even younger, I think. She was basically an infant. He was five when his mother, his dad had moved out, right basically when he was born. And then his mother sort of abandoned him with her grandparents who lived in Michigan. And so that's where
So A Family Thing was partly shot in Memphis and in Covington, Tennessee.
Really?
But there's another Memphis. His final film credit was actually in Coming to America with the numeral 2, the sequel by that Craig Brewer director.
Oh, right. Oh, really? Huh. Yeah, we played his voice, some of his voice roles, and some of the best of. In the original Coming to America, there's the great line where he says, he has a job, or he works, or whatever it is. His son works. He's the king in Coming to America. And what did you? All right. So the three that popular culture I think recognizes him most as is Lion King, Darth Vader, and Field of Dreams.
Yeah.
What did you?
I will say. I mean, this movie is totally forgotten. I've actually never seen it.
Yeah.
He was nominated for a Best Actor Oscar once, and that was in a movie in the early 70s called The Great White Hope.
Right.
Which is a sort of a biopic of the boxer Jack Johnson. That was his only Best Actor nomination.
Interesting. I've never talked to you about The Lion King.
I don't care about The Lion King. I am both too old and too young. Like, it was not a thing of my childhood. It was not a thing of my kids' childhood. And so I don't care about
The
Lion
King. How about the original?
I don't think I've ever even seen it. You know.
Really? How about the original Star Wars movies?
I'm a person who's alive in the world, so, like, I've seen all the Star Wars movies,
and I
like the first Star Wars movies, and I, you know, it's only a voice role for him. I mean, it's always, obviously,
wasn't
it's an iconic voice role. I like the Star Wars movies, but I'm not, like, a Star Wars fan. I feel like that's a different level of, like, you know, I like these movies, but I don't, like, obsess over them or anything.
All right, and then Field of Dreams.
I don't like Field of Dreams. I mean, I haven't seen it in a long time, but that's not my. I'm a Bull Durham guy. Bad News Bears guy. I don't need like really self, like, you know, puffed up romanticized baseball stuff. I'm more of a Bull Durham guy.
100% with you there. And The Natural would fall more in this other category as well, with the Field of Dreams category.
Yeah, I actually did a baseball literature class in college. I read both of those books. The book is not called Field of Dreams, but I read both of those books. I think I like the book of The Natural more than the movie. The movie's a little uptight.
Filmed in Buffalo. Okay, couple of NBA things. One is Jamal Murray got a new deal, 4 years, $208 million. Never been an All-Star. And I guess he could have waited.
Yeah, but he's been awesome in the playoffs and won a title, so that's sort of more important than being an All-Star. But I do think, you know, small guards, you wonder about how they age, and he was sort of not so great. He had, like, a good game against the Lakers, but for the most part, wasn't great in the playoffs, wasn't been great over the summer. This is a 4-year extension on top of, I think, another year left on his deal. This is a lot of money going out pretty far. You sort of have to do it, I guess, because you're trying to win a title right now. But if you think you sort of have to do it because you're trying to win a title right now, why is Kentavious Caldwell-Pope playing for the Orlando Magic? So I don't know.
Well, that's the problem. And then they're going to have to sign Aaron Gordon next, and that will take them. I mean, if the point is that they don't want to play the tax, and they very clearly they don't want to go deep in the tax anyway.
They're in the tax, but they don't want to go to the deeper range, right?
What are they going to do with What are they going to do with Aaron Gordon? Like at some point,
the Denver situation is interesting, and I'm still a month away from writing season preview kind of stuff, and so I may change my mind. But like, I was listening to a podcast yesterday, and like Zach Lowe was saying, you guarantee me Jamal Murray is his best self next season, I might still pick the Nuggets to get to the finals. And I picked the Nuggets to get to the finals 2 years ago when they got to the finals, one of my better preseason predictions. I think the Nuggets are super fragile, super fragile right now. And so I may end up being lower on the Nuggets than most people this season.
Okay. And then the other one is, I saw a piece the other day just out of New Orleans about Brandon Ingram. He's not going to get a contract. Jamal Murray gets a contract. Brandon Ingram's not. It's really a hell.
Trey Murphy's going to get a contract.
Right.
And not Brandon Ingram.
And he's posting stuff about not being appreciated. And I guess they had an informal camp for the players that he's organized in the past. And he didn't attend this one. But you sort of have it's a tough position because the Pelicans obviously don't want to pay him. But nobody wants him who then would have to pay him. And so, what do you do?
There's a certain kind of zone that a certain kind of NBA player reaches. And I can think of two other players I think are in the same spot right now. That's Zach LaVine in Chicago and Julius Randle in New York, where you're a talented scorer. You're a 20-point-a-game scorer. And when you're young on your rookie contract, you start scoring 20 points a game. People give you max contracts. But then you realize that, you're a scorer, but you're not a great offensive player. You're just a good scorer. And you're just a good scorer who doesn't do a lot of other stuff. And you're on this big contract. And people realize that's, spending that much money on, a good scorer who's not really a great all-around offensive player is not actually conducive to winning. And the team you're on sours on you, and they would like to move you, but no one else wants to pay that money. And, Bradley Beal. Similar, he got moved for, Phoenix did that. But those kind of players, I think, if I run an NBA team, I'm really wary of giving big money contracts to players who are good scorers but not good all-around players and finding myself in that kind of situation with those kind of players. I don't know who wants Brandon Ingram for that money,
Right. Well, of course, I think this is true. The slight difference with the Bradley Beal situation, or if you traded for Zach LaVine, is they have the contract. You'd have to take on the contract, right? It is time for him to get a new contract.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's been a. I don't know what happens in this situation. Does he just go play for the Pelicans because he has to, and then get some lesser deal on the open market? Is that what?
I don't. Surely no one's going to be dumb enough to give him a max contract, right, whether that's New Orleans or anyone else. But I think New Orleans would like to move him right now on the deal he's on.
But you can't take him on because you're taking on a malcontent. Whereas if you took on Zach LaVine, he'd be getting his money, right? He doesn't want a new deal. He just has the deal. Whereas you can't take on Brandon Ingram because he's not going to report or be happy unless you give him a new contract, and nobody wants to give him the new contract.
Yeah, no, you're right. There's that complication, too. So there's different – the situation's totally different, but I think they're all similar in that. I think all three of those players mentioned,
similar.
The teams would like to trade them.
Yes.
And there's no one to trade them to, and it's sort of what are we doing here? Is Julius Randle going to start for the Knicks when their best lineup would not include him? And they just added, OG Anunoby and Mikal Bridges. They have all these good perimeter players. They want to play a center. Who's going to – and then – the Bulls just traded for Josh Giddey, and they've got Kobe White, and they're trying to go that direction. And you're stuck with these guys with these big contracts, at least for the moment.
Was Rudy that in Memphis?
A little bit, but they got out early enough on Rudy, the money wasn't that big as it is now. And I think they got ahead of it. They identified early enough that they didn't move him for value. It was a situation where there just wasn't great value for him. but there was no harm. They didn't take back anything bad on it. You know, they correctly identified, and this was controversial at the time, it still is to a degree, but they looked at their team and they said, we can't afford all four of these guys, and we think that Marc Gasol, Mike Conley, and Zach Randolph are better all-around basketball players than Rudy Gay, and so Rudy Gay is the one we're going to move. And they got sort of ahead of it a little bit. Yeah,
We have a listener who has suggested another James Earl Jones movie. James Earl Jones movie, another baseball one. He was in Sandlot. You like Sandlot, right?
Well, no, Sandlot's a similar kind of thing. I've seen Sandlot. I like it okay, but similar kind of thing for me where I'm just a little bit too old, so it wasn't like,
I see,
you know, a movie of my childhood or teendom or whatever. I was sort of, you know, so I saw Sandlot after the fact. I didn't see it when it first came out.
All right. Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphis. That is true. That is a phenomenon of life, that there are movies that fall in a... I'm a little stunned that he's never seen a Lion King. How many Lion Kings have there been?
So there's three... I think there's three Disney Lion Kings, and then there's also the Disney live action, and then you have the Broadway.
There's a Broadway. Have you seen that?
I have seen the Broadway,
You've seen the Broadway. It was good?
Yeah, it's good. I mean, it plays... It's like it hits the...
Right.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it played all the songs.
Let's say Elton John did that. Yeah.
Yes. Which he did the Lion King as well.
Right. I saw The Lion King before I had kids.
Yeah.
Like,
it's 94.
So I just saw it actually as a grown up. It's 94.
I mean, it is it's 94. It was nominated for an Academy Award.
Yeah, I saw it as a grown up before I had kids. So it sort of fell in that for me. Like, it wasn't, I didn't see it as a kid, and I didn't see it short to my kids yet. I saw it as a, and so I saw it anyway, and I rather liked The Lion King. Then I don't know if I've seen any of the other ones, though. There's how many more? Three?
I believe there's three. I want to say the other two are like directed. No, maybe two. Two went to theaters. Three may have been direct to video.
All right. We're going to talk to Fishman. Fish on Friday on Tuesday coming up next. Before then, I will tell you NFL Week 2 is here. Start the season with a big return on FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. If you're new to FanDuel, get started with $200 in bonus bets guaranteed when you place your first $5 bet. So, build a same-game parlay for the Bills-Dolphins. That's Thursday night. Dalton Kincaid, anytime touchdown. Tyreek Hill, under receiving yards. Josh Allen, over passing yards. Whatever, you do you. I shape mine around the Bills. Just go to FanDuel.com/Calkins, C-A-L-K-I-N-S, C-A-L-K-I-N-S, to make every moment more this season. FanDuel is, of course, official sportsbook partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or older in present Tennessee. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call Tennessee Redline 1-800-889-9789. We'll talk to Fishman when we return. Fish on Friday on Tuesday. It's Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
And FM ESPN. Right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Joined now by Charles Fishman. He's our man in Washington, D.C. Charles is the author of three New York Times bestsellers. Most recently, One Giant Leap, about the extraordinary efforts of ordinary Americans to get us to the moon. Also a three-time winner of the Gerald Loeb Award, Excellence in Business Writing, and a retired Mississippi River tugboat deckhand. He joins me now. How are you, Charles?
I'm good. I'm a little behind. Did you get the list? I texted it to you.
I have the list.
I texted it to you during the music.
I saw it coming in.
That is a new low. That's a new low for prep. I don't know what's been going on. There's actually an item on there that I wanted to start with.
What do you want to start
on
with?
There.
I'll let you go ahead. Start with it. Go ahead, Charles. You know I let you run this segment.
You really let me have what we would call free reign.
Yeah.
Right up to the moment that you yanked the reins.
Right.
And the bit bit chokes me. I was captivated. I mean, look, James Earl Jones, you and Jeffrey and Chris have talked a lot about James Earl Jones. You know, literally a word, two words from him, and you knew who was talking, right? Across all of America, you know, incredible generational range. Like, my kids know who James Earl Jones is. But I was struck in reading the obits. Obviously, you didn't really linger on this. I just want to underscore it. His childhood disability, his childhood infirmity, became the thing he was known for.
Right.
Right? He went from being a child who didn't want to talk, who stuttered, who was uncomfortable, to being a person whose voice was, in some ways, the most, like, I love the David Letterman list of him reading objects in mirror may be larger than they seem. But what I was struck by, because this is where my brain goes, was his incredible work ethic. He was in 90 TV series. A single episode of a TV series usually takes a week. 90 TV series. And he did 120 movies. That's just insane productivity.
It is insane productivity.
The New York Times said he sometimes did 6 movies a year. I've had the privilege of being on a movie set. Over the life of his career, the whole life of his career was 60 years. If you start with the very first, he was in the Stanley Kubrick movie, now I can't remember the name of it, about the crazy general, 60 years, 1964 to 2024. Even if you account for all 60 years, and I don't think he was doing many movies now, that's 2 movies a year. That's every year his whole career. So that's incredible. And then he was on Broadway all the time. At one point, he did 18 plays in 30 months, which indicates that some of those plays did not last that long. But truly a guy who obviously, I haven't talked to him, you haven't talked to him, but he obviously reveled in his work. He loved working. Because at some point 20 years ago, he clearly never needed to work again a day in his life. And he also had a great sense of humor about himself and his work. The guy who did the voice in Star Wars, when David Letterman still called, he said, sure, I'll goof on myself and read the top 10 list in my voice. So that, I just wanted to say, there was a guy who worked hard, who didn't stop working hard, and who loved what he did. So there you go.
You got more Red Lobster news for us?
I just wanted to say, I sent you this. This is pure radio promotion. But last week we told you about the new CEO of Red Lobster, Damola Adamolokan, and what he had done at P.F. Chang's, what he was going to do at Red Lobster. And 3 days ago, the Wall Street Journal ripped us off and did that story. And I just want to say, stay here, and you will know what is going on, because we give you the news, and then people come back behind us and fill in the blanks.
Okay.
Exactly. I just wanted to close the loop on the hotel worker strike. We talked a little bit about that 2 weeks ago. And the strike only lasted 3 days, 10,000 hotel workers on strike. Sometimes when you stay in a hotel now, even when the hotel workers aren't on strike, it kind of
feels like they're
on strike. Not because of them, but thinned out the... It's interesting that we've gone from, can I get into your room and clean it at a Hampton Inn or a Hilton Garden Inn to... And we really need to, did you make the bed? Because then we won't clean it before the next guest comes. Right? They don't clean your hotel room at all. Anyway, but no contract is signed. The point of that kind of strike is we can bring you to your knees. Negotiate. That's the point of that kind of strike. And again, here we are. But really, the big news.
Yeah, the tonight, debate. You got the debate tonight. So, you know, you and I try to studiously avoid politics. But
I don't think anybody in the audience even knows who I will be.
They would never guess.
For.
I don't think anyone would ever guess who either of us we would vote for. And we try
the
to
debate,
keep it.
Do you know where the debate is?
Philadelphia, isn't it?
The debate is at the National Constitution Center in Philadelphia, which is a really cool museum about the Constitution. right in the heart of Philadelphia, Independence.
Okay,
right
so the last debate was obviously, I think probably in history, the most significant presidential debate ever.
Most debates have absolutely no outcome.
Right.
Like, we have the countdown
clock. We can debate on who won, who lost, whatever else.
CNN,
they don't have
I love this. CNN is not hosting the debate, and they're running the countdown clock. They've been running it for a week.
But the last debate was obviously incredibly important because it forced Joe Biden out.
Even though many of us turned it off and couldn't watch, it was consequential.
Right. And who knows, this debate.
Here's why tonight's debate could be consequential when most debates are not. Because the contest between former President Trump and Vice President Kamala Harris is razor thin, is so close. It is as evenly divided as it could be in a nation. I actually think, and we'll talk about this in a minute, the interesting question is, why are we within, you know, a tenth of a percentage point of division? Why isn't one side strongly ahead of the other? But the consequence of being so close, and not just close nationally, which it is, nationally, of course, doesn't matter at all. It's the contested states, the few states that could go either way, Pennsylvania, Arizona, North Carolina. And in a place like Pennsylvania, and the pundits have figured out that both Donald Trump and Kamala Harris need to win Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania is the path to victory, Michigan, Wisconsin. Within a point, and that's the state that it's in. So a strong performance by either one of them, a zinger by either one of them that makes people laugh and pay attention, a flub by either one of them, we just saw what that looks like. But Barack Obama famously had a terrible debate against Mitt Romney and then recovered. Most of the time they don't matter, but it's so close. And so here's...
Well, and hold on one second. And it's not just that it's close. It's that Kamala is relatively... She's been vice president for, you know, this duration, but right. She is relatively... Unknown. Most of America.
Let me finish now. Tell you about the poll.
That's fine. You can get to the poll after I finish my sentence. Damn it! Most of America has never heard her speak.
Okay.
In contemporaneously, right? Has never just. We've heard highlights of her speak, whatever else. But yeah. I think it's true. What's the poll?
The poll is that. I think there's a CNN poll. 70% of Americans polled in the last week said they wanted to learn more about her and needed to learn more about her. And the equivalent number for Donald Trump was 10%. 10% of Americans wanted to learn more about Donald Trump. So that's right. Another interesting thing, I don't know if you remember this, is before the debate became important the last time, there were literally stories in the Washington Post and the New York Times last time about whether Donald Trump and Joe Biden would shake hands on stage, which they did not, which frankly I thought was disgusting, maybe too strong a word.
It was weird. Weird is thrown around too much. It was noticeable.
It was disrespectful to both of us because the natural thing coming out on the stage would have been to shake hands. And so you sort of had to, you know, keep your hands, keep your arms folded or keep whatever. And again, they're asking the question. No one's written a story about it this time. It's too much at stake. But again, people are asking the question, will Donald Trump and Kamala Harris shake hands? And I hope they do. I think they should.
Take me through some of the nuts and bolts here. Where it's going to be televised? Where? What time? What do we know?
There's a lot of interesting little pieces. Starts at 9. ABC is hosting.
9 your time. 9 Eastern.
Starts at 9 Eastern. 8 o'clock Central. I wish I was in Central Time. I wish the debate began.
Who's moderating?
I don't remember the names of the moderators. To be honest, okay. They're not. The moderator is the man who hosts. Jeffrey can find it for us quickly. The man who hosts the ABC Evening News, which
David Muir
gets 7 million viewers a night. He gets more than the peak of Fox and MSNBC and CNN combined every single night.
And yet, to be honest, I don't know how much impact he has. I watched the ABC News last night just to see what the evening news was like these days. And a woman, there's a...
Lindsay Davis. David Muir and Lindsay Davis. And Lindsay, L-I-N-S-E-Y.
S-E-Y. Yeah. No D. She left the D out. And it's going to go 90 minutes. They kind of get a long time to talk for debates, 2 minutes to answer, 2 minutes to reply. Usually the reply is cut short, 30 extra seconds if the moderators grant. This is a moderator-dominated debate, I would say, because the mics will be muted when you're not talking. If the mics aren't muted, then either one of whoever's debating can bust in. Wait a minute, I get to reply. I need to reply. I need to reply. You're not letting me reply. We've seen that in the debates with six, you know, Democrats or six Republicans. Neither Trump nor Harris will get to do that. Harris was known in the presidential debates and also in the vice presidential debate against Pence for refusing to allow herself to be interrupted. Excuse me, Vice President Pence, I'm speaking. And we've seen lots of clips of that recently. We won't have any of that tonight because both sides will get a chance to say their piece. So it goes till 10:30 on the East Coast. Here's the thing. You can say exactly the same sentence about the principal goal for both of them. Vice President Harris wants to look presidential. She wants to look like the candidate of change, even though she's part of the current presidential administration. Donald Trump wants to look presidential. He wants to look like the candidate of change compared not to his own administration, but to the current administration. So they both kind of have the same goal in that sense. I think Harris's goal is to throw Donald Trump off his game, which has not proven to be that difficult to irritate him and get under his skin. Trump's goal is to tie her squarely to the policies that many people don't like of the Biden administration and to, you know, things like inflation and what's going on in Ukraine, what's going on in Gaza. So what will be interesting to see, people have recommended that Harris completely keep her cool, that she focus on telling her story and let Trump swirl around the way he is prone to. And people have recommended that Trump try and be, you know, calm and direct and not, you know, not attack Harris personally. There are debates, including debates against Hillary Clinton, where Donald Trump just the impersonal and says mean things about the person he's debating. And his advisors really don't want him to do that tonight. So, but a reminder that for all the hubbub, most debates have no impact.
Yeah, it's interesting, by the way, on your point, I want to move on after this, on your point about how razor thin and close it is, what's interesting to me is it's not just in the Electoral College that has made it close. It is actually just even the essentially, if you look at the polling across the country, it is close.
Like within a point across the country, within a point in many states, the House of Representatives of the United States of America, the Republicans have it by 4 seats. If they keep it, they'll keep it between 4 and 6. If the Democrats win it back, they'll win it back by 4 seats. If they're lucky, the Senate, literally evenly divided, the vice president is expected to be the tie-breaking vote, or one party will have one more senator than the other. That doesn't give either side a governing majority. And a great piece I read from The Atlantic from 2 years ago made a different point, which is if you just barely lose, you don't go back and reflect on what you've done wrong and how to appeal to a wider breadth of voters. This is what my son has said. You just try and figure out how to win half of 1%.
Right.
You don't change your approach completely and rethink what it means to be the Republican Party or the Democratic Party. You just say, I just have to get 3 more members of the House to be in charge. And that's what you want, a democracy that has a certain vibrancy and where parties get thumped
you know, like Ronald Reagan.
Well, I know as a sports fan, once you're done with your head coach, you want him to get crushed so they'll fire him. It's sort of the same thing. Right. Get rid of the general manager, get rid of the coach. If you lose close, there's no excuse. I mean, there's no reason to make a change.
Ronald Reagan got us Bill Clinton, and Jimmy Carter got us Ronald Reagan. And both Ronald Reagan and Bill Clinton were in their own ways transformative presidents. And so right, this razor's edge isn't good in a lot of ways, but it isn't good long term for the health of either party, or I think for innovation and good governance. Plus, it doesn't give anybody a real mandate.
Can't
you don't get to go in anyway. So
all right, iPhone dropped yesterday. The new iPhone dropped yesterday. The iPhone 16. What you think?
I gotta say, I just love. And maybe I'm a little unusual on this, although there's YouTube videos that say I'm not unique. I like unboxing a new pair of AirPods. I even like just unboxing a new pair of Apple headphones. I'm talking on corded headphones, so I don't have that weird audio problem. I love a new phone. You know, it just feels, for me, I don't know what it is about Apple products and technology products in particular. It just sort of feels like I'm going to be a better person now. I'm going to get more stuff done. My list will have more cross-throughs at the end of the day. I think that the general wisdom yesterday was kind of a yawn about the phone. I want to talk for a minute about the other things. I think the big thing that they announced yesterday that is getting almost no attention is they announced all new generations of AirPods. If you look around the United States right now, Apple AirPods, little white cordless headphones, they are like the digital device that people use, right? Everybody's always using them. I've got headphones in my head all the time, so much so that my wife literally asked me to take them out when I talk to her. I only use one at a time. But yesterday they introduced a new kind of AirPod, an upgrade, just an upgrade of a current product, AirPods Pro 2. And they aren't changing the technology, they're changing the software. AirPods Pro 2 will now allow you to do an audiologist quality hearing test. How is your hearing? Do you hear correctly? Are your ears working well? And if your hearing has fallen short, and I raise my hand, both my wife and I are drifting into the area where we need hearing aids, and my parents both have them, Trisha's parents both have them, we know where we're headed, the AirPods Pro 2 will function as hearing aids. It will read your hearing test, and then it will offer to improve the sound quality using your AirPods, and those AirPods will be FDA approved.
So, that's not just hearing aids for what you're listening to over your Apple speaker, but also
it's
just
the ambient
in conversation too.
No, it more important in conversation, right? Because it can adjust the It can adjust the audio for listening to a phone call or listening to music. No, it will fix the ambient sound when people are talking to you. You will hear that.
That's incredible.
Louder and crisper. And I read up on the data this morning. Only about a third of Americans could use some hearing support of some kind, low level to medium level hearing impairment. They need hearing aids. Over 70, only a third of people have them who need them. Only so 70% of the people over the age of 70 aren't using hearing aids.
Well, let's be honest. Claire has said to me, that I should have hearing aids. One of the reasons I picked
every day, my wife and I, every day we have. And what's striking in our conversation is that I will say, "I'm gonna make da 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 for dinner," and my wife will say, "You're not making dinner tonight?" You know, I just said exactly the opposite every day. So I think that's a game changer. $249.
Will it also make it more
real hearing aids?
Will it also make it like there is sort of a psychological barrier to getting a hearing aid, right?
Exactly.
To taking
exactly.
And so it's not just that it's amazing they can do it and they'll be available and whatever else.
It's a little bit of camouflage.
It makes it sort of you'll be able to get yourself across that psychological barrier. I'm just going to use my iBits. This is not it's just an AirPod I got in my ear.
I did think you were going to say over 70% who need them don't use them. But how many people over 70 use AirPods?
That number will be increasing all the time because we're growing into it.
We're going to go. We age.
What else on Apple? Because we're running out of time now, and I want to get to Waffle House. You know,
The Apple Watch is going to detect sleep apnea, which would be great. Again, many people suffer from sleep apnea, interrupted breathing during their sleep. The watch, if you wear it, will detect it. Just a reminder, the Apple Watch is going to be thinner and bigger and lighter, all the things it usually does. The Apple Watch has built-in fall detection. If you experience a fall, the gyroscopes in the watch know that.
This is like for old people. All of a sudden, Apple's just like for really old people, falling, not listening.
For a minute, the watch calls 911 automatically. Isn't that incredible? The new battery on the watch charges to 80% in 30 minutes. The iPhone 16, again, I think it's going to be a much bigger hit than people said. It's the first iPhone that will have AI on it. I think this is going to really be AI for the masses, the way the iPod and the iPhone with iTunes built in completely transformed music. I think the iPhone 16 is going to be, 10 years from now, we will say, that's when ordinary people started to use AI.
What's it going to do? Like, well, give me an example. What's it do that my...
I think the first thing that it's going to do that's going to be great is you can point the iPhone at something and take a picture of it, a dog, a plant, a restaurant, and it will tell you about that. The example they used was, you know, pointed at a dog in the park, it tells you what kind of dog it is, what the breed is. Pointed at a restaurant, it immediately tells you the hours and the Yelp rating. You don't have to do anything. That seems simple, but there's a lot built in. It will edit your emails. It will edit your text messages. It will read them and say, here's some suggestions. It's going to summarize incoming emails. It will order your email inbox if you ask it to at a glance so that the priority emails are at the top. I get a lot of ads from Pottery Barn, I got to say, that I don't need, and Amazon. But it's also got a new camera. And it's got a little button on the side, the iPhone 16, a new button that's really like a trackpad. It's like a tiny little mouse. And that button allows you to control the camera without having to put your finger on the screen, which you're looking at or which is facing the thing you're taking a picture of, either way. And I think that little camera control button, along with the quality of the camera, is going to be a huge hit along with AI. My wife's phone is officially 5 years and 1 month old, July 14th, 2019. She has an XR, and we are going to order her a new, well, we're going to set up to order today. She's getting pink.
Hilariously, I've got incoming questions here. Ask Charles, how much memory should I get on the iPhone 16? I have an iPhone 8 and battery about worn out.
Oh, my goodness, an iPhone 8. Well, look, you know, I'm the parent of a computer scientist. Buy the memory you can handle. We're certainly going to get my wife 256, and we might jump up to 512. We don't know how much memory the AI is going to suck up. So if you can afford the extra $100, get the extra $100. The Wall Street Journal said this morning, if your phone is 2 or 3 years old, you will notice a dramatic difference. My phone's 5 years old. That person's phone is 8 years old. And so they're going
to... Waffle House. We got to get to Waffle House before he starts playing music.
The CEO of Waffle House died 3 days ago, Walt Ellers. Really, low-key guy. I love Waffle House. There are 2,100 Waffle Houses. There's hundreds of Waffle Houses right there in Tennessee, or not hundreds, but I think there's somewhere between 100 and 200. There's no Waffle House. The nearest Waffle House is a 40-minute drive from me. Walt Ellers, low-key guy, really the only place he's ever worked. He graduated from Georgia Tech, did an engineering job for a little while. At age 26, in 1994, he joined Waffle House as a buyer. He was buying food and supplies for them. And within 8 years, he was, ten years, he was the president of Waffle House. He was there
whatever it is. It's 28 years. He was there. He worked at Waffle House longer, more than half his life. And just an interesting guy. Really believed that, as he said often, our business is very simple. It's just scrambled eggs and waffles and steak. The real business is welcoming people, making people feel like they're at home. And of course, 24 hours a day, 40,000 people work at Waffle House, which is kind of extraordinary. Not a public company, so we don't hear a lot about it. Here's the most interesting thing I learned about Waffle House while reading about Walt Ehlers. No one from his family or from Waffle House would talk to the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal or the Washington Post for his obit, which is kind of sad because I think he had such an interesting career there. The most interesting thing I found out had nothing to do with them, though. Really amazing. At one point, and Jeffrey's going to tweet out a picture of this, at one point, Waffle House teamed up with Chick-fil-A when they were both young in 1964, and you could buy Chick-fil-A sandwiches at Waffle House. And the experiment lasted less than a year. Guess why the experiment was stopped?
Because Waffle House wanted to sell them on Sundays.
Chick-fil-A sandwiches were too popular. No one was buying Waffle House food.
Really?
That was the moment to go all in on Chick-fil-A. They had to stop selling Chick-fil-A at Waffle House because Chick-fil-A was too popular.
Charles, thanks very much. Appreciate
it. Watch the debate and enjoy it.
You can follow him on Twitter or X at C Fishman. Jeffrey, what is coming up next on 92.1?
Here's what's coming up next.
Jeff, here's what's coming up next on Jason and John. Jason Fitz will join them today. Tim Murray joins me today on Jeffrey Wright and Company. It's Tuesday, so that means Jeff will join Gabe at 5 o'clock.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We got to get out of here. We will be back tomorrow. For now, we're just done.